This week's episode is sponsored by Mama Zen. Are you looking for a mindful parenting resource? Look no further than Mama Zen. This app has been used to help women break generational cycles, overcome anxiety, and become ultimately happier moms. It's an app that has mind power sessions. They combine meditation, hypnotherapy, and mindfulness. The goal is to help women to overcome some of their negative emotions and replace them with more positive, loving, and empowering emotions. Check out our link in the show notes and use code 1J when downloading the app.
We're your hosts, Dana and Kara,
and this is From the Mouths of Babes.
Welcome back, everybody. We are so excited to be recording a new episode for you and excited for our guest. It's always fun that Kara and I, as we've grown into our adulthood, we get to go back and have conversations with people who were pivotal from our youth. And so we're really excited to have Christy Davis on our podcast. We grew up in the same like congregational boundaries and attended church with her. I babysat her kids. So now she has, you know, married kids, grandkids, and teenagers. And it makes me feel
crazy how
bit
fast
old.
That all went, isn't
I
it?
I know.
Really quite weird.
I know. But we're excited to have her on. I'm going to give a little introduction of who Christy is. Christy is a native Arizona girl who has never fully acclimated to the heat. I mean, who does?
Nope. How can you?
She is happily married to Jeff. They are parents of 7 amazing people and grandparents to the cutest kids in all the land. Christy is a certified life coach who knows that the most important relationships in life are sometimes the hardest to get right. Her work is all about strengthening homes and families by strengthening and empowering mothers. Love that. We're so excited to have you and really looking forward to this conversation.
Yeah, I'm excited to be here.
So we kind of talked about this a little bit when we first jumped on the call, but I have a bunch of friends that I've kept in touch with from Gilbert, Arizona, which is where we grew up and where Christy still lives. Mm-hmm. And just the timing of this is kind of ironic, but there has been a lot of stuff in the news lately about a teenage boy who was brutally beat up and as a result died. And so I think it's just, I've been trying to like think through how I would respond to that situation, how to raise my children, how to instill values into my kids. And so I've had that on my mind a lot.
It's kind of rocked our world around here.
Yeah.
Close to home. And, you know, some of my friends' kids know these kids. One of my sons, we didn't talk about this. One of my son's good friends was beat up by this same group, but got away. So it's too close to home.
Yeah. And I mean, it sounds like it's been like a chronic problem for a couple of years where this like group of bullies just are relentlessly harassing people. And as a parent, like my oldest are 9 and we just had a discussion yesterday. Some kids have been using the N-word at school and the, you know, 3 of the 10 black kids are in my daughter's class and they're like her best friends. And I was like, well, what happened? You know, like, did you protect your friend? And I was like, oh, absolutely, mom. I immediately was like, and I was like, yeah, you get her safe and you don't ever let anyone talk bad about your friends. And like, as a parent, I like cannot imagine my kid being the problem and not stepping in a way that would stop it, you know?
Yeah. I really like the ending there because you started to say, I thought you were going to say, I can't imagine my kid being the problem. And I'm like, oh, I've been there. My kid has been the problem. But yeah, the difference is not stepping in to correct the behavior.
Yeah, you teach your kids to be kind when they're little and you hope that that translates as they get.
Yeah, because by the time they're 18 and 19, which is how old these kids are, there's really not any controlling them at that point, or even redirecting them if they don't want to be redirected. But there had to have been signs of that kind of behavior much younger, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I would put my kid in prison. I'd think I wouldn't have an issue with that.
The parents, I don't know all of them, but I do have friends who live in their neighborhoods and have interacted with the parents and had some pretty nasty interactions with the parents too. So the kids are maybe, some of them at least, you know, following suit.
Right. Oh, that's so, such a bummer. But I think that's why it makes having conversations like this so important, so that people who maybe they are noticing things in their teens or younger kids and need resources, they can turn to these types of conversations to help them, so that when their kid is 18 or 19 and they don't have as much control, like you said, they will have kind of hopefully had resources and early intervention.
And I think anybody who's listening to a parenting podcast is on the right track. Yeah. You know, those are the parents who are very intentional and involved and want to do the best they can. So I'm sure your listeners are among the best of the best.
We think so. Okay. So with all of that in mind, right now I have a 4.5-year-old and a 2-year-old. And I find that I worry right now about my relationship that I currently have with my 4-year-old and how I will project that for the rest of their life. And whether it's like we have a hard parenting moment and I project that they're going to be a hard teenager, or it's always just going to be like me butting heads with my 4-year-old. So I'm curious what your thoughts are of how do we not project difficult moments and times with our kids and label our kid or our teen as hard?
Yeah. Well, the fact that you're asking that question and that you're aware of that is a really good sign that you probably won't do it because you don't want to do it, you know? And I think this gets so much easier as you have a few kids and you start to see what is normal. Because I remember when my oldest was going through a tantrum phase at age 2 or 3, I was so worried about that and that behavior. And I felt like it was my job to teach her how to do better, or, you know, I just took it so seriously.
Yeah.
And it seemed like a huge deal. And then after a few kids, I'm like, oh, every kid goes through this at this stage and they all grow out of it. And so of course we want to teach skills and we want to be patient and loving in the moment, but it just helps me mentally to know kind of what's normal and what's a stage. And it makes it easier once I've had a little bit of experience. I think it helped that I was the oldest of 7. And so I watched all my younger siblings go through phases, even as teenagers. And I kind of had an idea of what's normal. So I think it can be really helpful to talk to other moms who have been through, you know, that, who have had kids that age. And I know you have a lot of siblings that have had kids those ages, and to just kind of reassure yourself that, okay, this is a stage and we're going to be okay. This is not going to last forever. Even just walking yourself through that mentally. I had one kid in particular when he was 13, like 20 times a day, I was saying to myself, it's okay. 13 is a rough age. And it was a rough age for him. It was a rough age for me. It was a rough age for everyone in our house, because that kid was so angry at that time. And I just had to keep reminding myself, it's okay. It's a stage. 13 is a rough age. And actually then 14 was a rough age too. It was kind of a long stage, but just reminding yourself, I think it's not going to last forever.
Yeah. I feel like that is something that I have tried to implement, but then I sometimes get stuck and I'm like, okay, but if we're having multiple kids, cause you know, we need the experience. Well, one, the first one, the guinea pig, poor thing. Yeah. She's in trouble. But then I also think like, well, if you have multiple kids, you are in that stage for a long time, especially if you have your kids close together, you know, you're in the terrible twos and you know, right. You're back in the terrible twos a year later, or the 13s, 14s, 15s, you know? So I just kind of laugh where I'm like, yeah, I guess we, as parents, we just sign up for a really long phase and stage that lasts until they move out.
Well, and there's some different ways you can tweak that, right? You can tell yourself, oh, great, I always have someone in this terrible twos phase. Or you tell yourself, at least when I have someone in the terrible twos phase, I've always got someone who's not.
That's true.
So when I've had, because mine are kind of spread out, there's like 14 years between my oldest and youngest. And so always when I have a teenager, I've had somebody who's younger who still loves me, and I've had somebody who's older who's come out the other side of it. And so if there's always someone in a hard stage, but there's always someone in a good stage too.
That's so true.
Works out all right.
I love that. Like they still in they love me stage, which is, I'm really trying to like sit in that with my kids. I'm like, they haven't even told me they hate me in a long time and that I'm the worst mommy ever. So that's good.
Kind of a nice break, isn't it? Yeah. They'll probably do it again when they're a little older. Yeah. Wait, how old did you say your oldest is?
So my twins are almost 10, and then I have a younger guy that's 8 and a half.
Okay.
So we're in the, like, every stage is all at the same time where we go through this. And it's a power struggle between the three of them. And the youngest and the older sister, they kind of always think that they're in charge. But the biggest one physically is my easiest going. And I'm like, guys, you can't fight him forever. One of these days, he has 100 pounds on you. Like, you are so blessed.
You're gonna push him too far.
So cool. Yeah. I'm like, you guys only have a couple years before he's just going to start sitting on your face and it now.
One of my girls, she was my second, and she would just pick fights with her brothers for years. She would pick at them, and she was bigger than them for a long time. And they got to the point where one of her brothers got big enough to beat her up, like, pretty good. And that was the last time she picked a fight.
Because I only have one daughter, and she is by far like my hardest, because she's very intelligent, but she's also very emotional, and she knows how to like use her emotions to the best of her abilities. And so that, like same with Dana, I'm like, this relationship, I'm going to have to put so much effort into like our connection. And you think it would be easy with a daughter, but because we're so similar, I think makes it hard.
So I would just point out one thing, you know, because I coach parents all the time. And so this is the kind of thing that I bring to their attention. When you tell yourself, oh, I'm going to have to put so much effort into this relationship, notice that it makes it feel like a drag.
Yeah.
Yes.
Right. And then it makes it actually even harder to connect with them when you're telling yourself, oh, this is so hard and I have to do it. And so just be careful with the way you tell yourself what you're trying to do. You know, I am all for building relationships, but because it's fun and because it feels better to parent when you have a good relationship with the kid, not because, it's going to be so hard, but I really should. That's just what I'm supposed to do as a mom. That just takes the fun out of it.
I think that, that's such a good reminder, because it makes it a chore or makes it part of the task list of motherhood versus just a relationship,
which and we is have what so many tasks. We don't need any more tasks. The relationship is the part that can be really fun.
That is a really good point. And the emphasis and the words we use really do have power, and the way our brains function.
One other thing I would say in answer to this question is, you probably will have kids that are harder for you than others.
Sure.
Or at least stages that are harder than others. And it's really important that we be patient with ourselves during those stages and allow ourselves to be human, and not feel so guilty. Like, one of my daughters in particular, just for some reason, she just pushed every last button for my husband. And her behavior didn't really bother me that much, but it just really drove him insane. And then a few years later, we had a boy that was making me lose my mind. And my husband was like, what's the big deal? So it's really fine. Even when you have a kid that's harder for you, doesn't necessarily mean the kid's harder, but for whatever reason, your personalities clash or are too similar or whatever. Like, it's important that we just be patient with ourselves and realize we're human and it's okay. And we're just going to keep trying.
Yeah. And I think that oftentimes what I've had to do is step back and think like, okay, why is their behavior triggering me so much so that I can actually figure out what the problem is. And more often than not, it's the problem is with me and not with them.
I would say 100% of the time, the problem is with us.
Yeah.
Our reaction, the problem is us in our reaction. Not that they don't have any problems or not that they don't have any things we need to correct, but
right.
If we're getting all emotionally worked up, that's ours to be in charge of, you know?
Okay. So let's talk about that. Cause
yeah.
I think whether you have young kids, whether you have teenagers, there's a lot of emotions.
Mm-hmm.
And so how do you manage that? I know that you've talked about in your own podcast as well, that different tools for calming your brain.
Mm-hmm.
But first I think I want to touch on like understanding anxiety and big feelings in teen, and what do you do if you notice that you have a kid who's struggling with anxiety or big feelings? And then we can talk about tools for us calming our brains when we get triggered by something. And maybe that can also extend to tools for our kids to calm their brains down.
Yeah. So I think the first thing with emotions, especially big emotions, is the first thing that's helpful is for us to normalize it.
Mm.
Because emotions for little kids, big emotions can be overwhelming and they can be scary and they don't know what to do with them. I mean, we as adults have a hard time sometimes knowing what to do with our big feelings, let alone these kids for where sure. This is all new to them.
Yeah.
And so I've noticed, especially with all the talk in the world these days about anxiety, my little ones even have picked up on some of those terms like anxiety and depression. And I remember I had like my 7-year-old come to me and say, my friend thinks I have depression and I think I do too. And it was because he was sad one time, right? He didn't know the difference, but he had heard about this and this was this big scary thing. And so it was a really great conversation where we could just talk about big feelings are very normal. I have big feelings. I get really sad. I even get depressed sometimes. And it doesn't mean there's something wrong. That's just part of being a human. One of my very favorite parenting tools is just to model what I'm going through, like out loud. So process my own anxieties or my own sadness or my own big emotions kind of out loud in front of my kids, because then I'm doing it at a time when they're not heightened, they're not worked up. And so they can observe me. So I might say, oh my gosh, I have this thing coming up tomorrow and I'm feeling so nervous about it. Like it's making me distracted. I can't think about anything else today. And, you know, just kind of talk out loud and let them see that that's all normal and it's okay. And it's not going to last forever.
Oh, that's, I really like that example. I think I do that in the moment when the stress or anxiety with my kid is like at its peak,
mm-hmm.
but I'm not very good at doing it when things are calm so that they, like you said, they observe me working through the emotions.
Yeah.
And it's not required that they then model it right then and there.
Right. Right. And I'm sure you've heard the saying, when emotions are high, intelligence is low.
Mm-hmm.
So in the moment when they're feeling big emotions is never the time to try to teach them or require them to control them or anything like that. It's just to kind of normalize it and validate. And yeah, it's okay that you're feeling this way.
It's so fascinating how early they pick up on things like that are what we are modeling. We watch back videos from when my kids were super little all the time. And there's a video of my daughter saying, I'm going to freak out. Oh, I'm going to freak out. And she's like 2.5 or 3.
Has no idea what a freak out is, but
yeah. Oh, I'm just totally going to freak out. And I'm like, she learned that from me. I must have yelled.
Yeah. Kids are such a great mirror, aren't they?
Yeah. And I'm like, oh, wow. Now, like, I just probably thought it was so funny when she was little. Now I'm like, I was probably freaking out all the time. But
so cute.
Like, oh, well. The words we use, but
yeah. Yeah, they really
better than
do
a swear word.
Yeah, could have been way worse.
Yeah,
they really do pick up on so much more from who we are, I think, than from what we say. Yeah. Not that we shouldn't be intentional about what we say, because we should, and what we teach, but like so much of what they learn is just from who we are.
That's true. You want them to learn that from your home and not from other kids, or you know,
for sure.
They absorb their environment for sure. And if your home is the safest place and the place you talk about things first, then it seems like their brain will develop better.
Yeah.
Hopefully.
For sure.
Well, so when I hear that though, I think it sparks a little bit of anxiety, because I'm like, well, what if I don't model the behavior correctly all the time? Mm-hmm. Then they're going to end up being me, right? Because they're just practicing what I'm preaching. And so how do you separate that as a parent of like giving your children agency to make their choices and it not being a reflection of you, right? Because even with this example with these kids in Gilbert, where immediately I'm like, what are these parents doing wrong? Why aren't they involved? They're like, these kids obviously are bad kids because their parents were bad, right? But I also have to take a step back and recognize that when my kid makes a decision, I would hope that people would be able to separate and understand, like, our kids have their agency as well.
Yeah. And I've definitely been on that end of it. Like, my kids are old enough now that they make their own choices. They've chosen a lot of things that I did not teach them to choose.
Sure.
You know? Okay. I feel like there were kind of two parts to that question.
Yeah.
And the first part was maybe, okay, I feel so much anxiety about that, thinking that my kids are absorbing everything I do. So something I wanted to say about that is, I think one of the most valuable things for us to model for them is how to be human and how to make mistakes and then apologize and try again and repair. Because no family, no parent anywhere does it right all the time. And I think if God wanted children to be raised by perfect examples, he would have structured this whole plan very differently. So there's something really good for children being raised by imperfect mothers, apparently, because that's the way the plan is designed. So for me, that takes some of the pressure off. And to know that the most important thing for me to model for my kids is, when I do it wrong, how do I take accountability for that? And then course correct. How do I do it different and apologize and repair? So I wanted to make sure we said that first.
We've talked about that a lot, that like, I'm sure our parents apologized for things, but I highly doubt their parents ever apologized to them.
Yeah.
And I try to like acknowledge, I hate saying I'm sorry. I hate being wrong.
It's fundamentally a hard one for you.
Oh, it's so hard, but I tell my kids all the time, like, mommy's new. I have not parented a almost 10-year-old yet. You are new at this and I am new. I'm really sorry that I had like, I screamed or I lost it or.
Yeah. Which is so good, because then that gives them permission when they lose it or they make a big mistake or whatever. They don't have to think, oh, there's something wrong with me. They can think, oh, my mom made mistakes too. And when she did, what she did was apologize and try again. So I can do that too. I think that's so healthy for us to be teaching them.
Yeah. And if you have to, I feel like kids struggle so much more with like scrupulosity and OCD and perfectionism. Mm-hmm. And like, my kids are little and they're already like stressing about grades. I'm like, you can fail. Nobody cares. You can mess up. You don't have to do things perfectly. I just want you to try, like, show up and try. And I want you to have fun. You're little. I'm like, when I was in fourth grade, you know what I was doing? Climbing trees, getting bruises, like running amok. And you're not having nearly enough fun. Quit worrying about college. You're in fourth grade.
Yes. I love that. I actually have a distinct memory of my dad doing that when I was in junior high. And the junior high I went to was intense, and I was doing 2 and 3 hours of homework a night. And my dad took me aside and said, hey, if you come home with straight A's again on your report card, you are in big trouble. I do not want to see straight A's on that report card. And that was really pivotal for me looking back now. I realized that just gave me permission to just not take things so seriously. It was really important.
So I think a lot of what can help our children and our teens is the way that we phrase things. And I would love to talk and have you share some of the magic words to use with teens.
You must have like scanned through my podcast and see that I did an episode on that.
Yes.
Magic words with teens. There really have been for me some things that feel almost magical in how much better my advice is received. And it sounds something like this. Hey, I know that I can't control you. I know that you're going to do whatever you want to do. Here's something for you to think about, right? Because with teenagers, they are pre-wired to resist somebody trying to control their life for very good reason, right? They're at the stage where they're trying to decide who they are, figure out who they are separate from their parents, and trying to own their own agency and be in charge of their own lives, which is what they should be doing. And so when a parent comes in and says, hey, you have to do this and this and be here at this time and get this done, like they're going to resist whether that's something they want to do or not. A lot of them, okay, not obviously not every teenager is the same. And I've had some that are total people pleasers, and I've had some many who want to do exactly the opposite of what I say. And so, for example, when they hate the rules that I put in place on their phones, like they hate not being able to have a browser on their phone when they're teenagers. And they're like, you know, this can't stop me. I'm like, of course it can't stop you. Of course, if you want to go look at pornography, I know you can. That's not my problem. That's on you. I think it's been magic for me to approach difficult conversations with them that start with the word something along the lines of, hey, I know I can't control you. I know you can do whatever you want to do. Here's what I'm asking, or here's the rules that I'm trying to enforce, and here's why. That whole part about, I know I can't control you, just immediately releases the need for a power struggle, right? Because if I come in and say, hey, this is what you're going to do, then immediately I'm setting up a power struggle. Even if it's something that's totally for their own good. Like if I were to approach, okay, here's the family rule. You're not allowed to have a browser on your phone because it's not good for you. And because it could introduce pornography and all this stuff, like that's totally good for them. And I want to have a rule like that. But if I started off with, okay, I'm controlling this, I'm making the rule, and you've got to go with it, then I'm instantly going to get some pushback. Even if they were normally to agree with that rule, just presenting it in that way that I am the authority and I'm making the rule instantly sets up a power struggle. So I have learned to approach conversations like this where, like, okay, I know this might be dumb. I know you're going to hate it. I'm sorry. And obviously, you can do whatever you want to do. I know I can't control you. I know if you want to go find pornography, you can find it anywhere. I know this is not going to control that for you. I just feel like it's really important. Like, it's my job as a parent to put some boundaries in place to protect you and as much as I can. And the rest on you. If you want to go find pornography somewhere, you go find it. That's on you. I'm at least doing my part by setting up these rules for our family.
Okay.
I like that.
I like that in practice, but I also already am like, what? We're just going to like hand over control to our teenagers who their frontal lobe isn't even fully developed? Like,
well, here's the news flash for you. You're not handing over control. Like, you can't actually control that. You can control whether you allow a browser on their phone that you're aware of. Teenagers can go and find a burner phone. They can get an old hand-me-down phone from a friend and create their own account that you know nothing about. They can borrow their friend's phone who does have a browser. Like, you can't control a teenager.
Right.
Yeah.
You're just not going to make it easy. You're not going to hand them over, you know, all the tools to destroy themselves.
And something magical happens when you say, I can't control you and I know you could do it, so this is on you. Then all of a sudden they can't blame you for anything. Like it, they want to sometimes blame us. Well, the reason I'm rebelling is because you won't let me do this, right? And so as soon as we've said, hey, you can do whatever you want to do, that's on you, then they take a little bit more accountability for their own choices.
Okay. That's true.
Appreciate it.
it's interesting because I feel like I've had this conversation with friends too, when it comes to social media, when it comes to phones. And I think my quick reaction, I was literally having these conversations with friends last night, is like, okay, I'm never giving my teenager a phone. I'm never going to let them have social media. And then their response was, well, they're going to do it anyways. Then they're going to just do it behind your back. And so wouldn't you rather them make mistakes when they're under your roof and you teach them how to use social media appropriately? And I was like, oh, that's a really good point. And so I did think, like, it is, I think as parents, our fear takes over because we don't want them to experience all of the hard. And I think it's out of good reason why we want to have control.
Yeah, it comes from a good place.
Yeah. But I think it will do our kids a disservice. And like you said, ultimately, they're going to do it. Now it's just whether or not we put boundaries around their usage of a phone or their use of
I've even had, like, my youngest three kids, my first couple, like, social media hit, I didn't even know what it was. And like, it was a whole new trailblazing thing. We had no idea what was going on. As we figured it out a little bit, we've got some better systems in place. My youngest three kids have all opted, like, they're like, I don't want social media. And so we've talked about it. And I said, you know, they're right now, when they're 14, they don't get social media. When they're 16, they can if they want. But so far, they've been like, yeah, I've seen what it's done to my friends and I don't really want that. But I think part of the reason is because it's been an open discussion. And like, my 15-year-old recently came to me and says, I really want Snapchat. It's the way all my friends keep in touch. And I said, okay, well, here's why parents are terrified of Snapchat. I gave him some reasons, some things, some real case scenarios of things that have happened. And he's like, yeah, I know that happens, but here's what I can do about it. That doesn't have to happen to me because here's how you counter that. And I'd be like, okay, well, if you feel like you're ready for that, then okay. And then I check in with him. Sometimes I'll sit down next to him on the couch and say, hey, show me your Snapchat. And he gladly like turns it over. He's like, hey, you want to check my phone? Like, I think just because he knows I'm not trying to control him. I'm not trying to be the boss all the time. I'm just like there to help figure it out with him. So.
And such a safe, like, the open communication creates that safety that if, like, okay, if I do mess up, or if I think that I can control what gets sent to me or whatever, and I get put in position that actually, I'm not safe, I'm uncomfortable, I know I can go talk to mom and dad and they can help me fix it. Or,
and he knows he's not going to be in trouble and we're not going to like take away his phone and ground him or whatever. If kids live in fear of being punished, they're going to go somewhere else to try and get help instead of their parents. Not that there's never a time for boundaries or discipline or whatever, there is, but I think Dana, you're right, so many times our fear jumps in and takes control, and so we just, okay, that's fine, no phones, or I'm gonna ground you or whatever. And if kids live in fear of us taking away their privileges all the time, then they're not gonna want to come to us.
That's so true. Oh man.
Well, and you think of the kid, like, obviously our generation is different. Like, social media started, like, Facebook was founded in the year I graduated high school. So it was hardly even a thing. We could barely escape. And so but I do think of, like, the kids that struggled, like the kids that I was like, oh girl, what you doing? Like, you going through some stuff. I think of the relationships that they had with their parents, and they severely resented their parents, and they made decisions because they wanted it to be their decision, because they felt completely controlled or isolated by their parents, and having conversations with their parents wasn't safe. It was immediately shut it down. We don't talk about those kind of things.
And I actually talked to a young woman who had been dating this boy. Her mom totally disapproved and constantly told her how she disapproved and he was not a good influence or whatever for her. And she married the boy. Like, and I was talking to her when she was engaged, and she's like, half the reason I'm doing this is to show my mom she can't control my life. Like, that is the worst reason ever to get married.
Right.
Right. But they had set up this power struggle, and this girl was determined to win the power struggle no matter the cost to herself.
What a shame.
So sad.
As your friend, I'm telling you to run. Do not marry us. From a third party observer, maybe my advice will hit different. Yeah. Oh, that is. I see. This is why I can't actually be a therapist or a life coach, because if I tell, if someone asks for my opinion or my advice on something and they don't follow it, you dead to me. You did wrong. You didn't.
Good
listen.
Luck having teenagers then, because they are going to push that boundary.
I mean, baby steps. I am just thinking, like, how am I going to feed these children? They're already ravenous all the time. How am I going to feed three teenagers at once? I don't know how people do
teenagers it. And food. Holy cow.
I hate grocery shopping.
So the So the best way to avoid a power struggle then is to, in essence, relinquish your control. And when I say that as a parent, it's like, obviously you're still going to have boundaries. You're still going to have rules. There's still going to be consequences, but I think you communicate to them, these are my hopes. This is why I'm doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And these might be some of the consequences, right? Natural consequences.
Totally. If
these things happen, but ultimately you have your agency. You choose.
I think maybe,
yeah,
maybe a better way to put it is it to avoid power struggles. Mm-hmm. And also just to stay in charge of ourselves emotionally, we have to learn which things are ours to control and which things are not ours to control, which is really hard to separate out sometimes as a parent.
For sure.
I am in charge of the structure that I create in my family, right? I'm in charge of some of the rules and the consequences and things. I'm 100% in charge of my own emotional responses and how I behave. I'm never in charge of how my child chooses to respond to me or my rules or my consequences. I can't possibly be in control of their choices. I can't possibly be in control of their emotions. And so much, I think so many times when parents are frustrated, it's because they're trying to control the wrong thing. They're trying to change the way their child feels or trying to control their choices or their behaviors. And those things are just not possible for another person to control.
Yeah.
Because we can't even control our own emotions sometimes. So
right. and the ironic thing is when we try to control somebody else's emotions, we lose control of ours. You know, you ever tried to get a toddler to stop throwing a tantrum? What happens when that becomes your goal is to try and get them to stop their tantrum? I end up having a tantrum, right? Mm-hmm. I jump right in there with them. I lose control of myself. It's because even when they're two, we cannot control their emotions. And that's never our job.
Okay, that was really interesting. And I feel like I need to like absorb that a little bit more.
Write that down.
I mean, it's like our life's work, I think, as mothers, is try to figure out what is our part, which part is mine to control, which part is my child's to control, and then which parts do I just turn over to Jesus, because he's going to have to figure that out. I've had a lot of those too.
Yeah. Jesus got a lot of wheels he got to be driving right now.
He does.
Okay, what if, because I think, you know, when we have examples of like a mother and a child, more often than not, I feel like that means that my husband and I are on the same page.
Mm.
But what if?
That would be lovely, wouldn't it?
Right.
Mm-hmm. That was always the case.
your parenting philosophies are different between you and your spouse, and you're trying to parent a teen.
This is super common. In fact, I find it pretty uncommon, at least from the clients that come to me. I find it pretty rare that mom and dad agree about everything.
Yeah.
Every now and then I'll have like a couple that comes to me together because they want to be on the same page, and I love it. It's all of our ideal, but it's not the reality for most people, at least some of the time. So the first thing I would say about that is it's okay. Like, again, there's a reason the plan was designed this way, with two people who come from very different backgrounds and are different genders and different, you know, there's a reason we have different approaches. And I think sometimes that can even be really valuable. It's good for kids to be exposed to different kinds of people and different parenting philosophies and different parenting styles even.
Yeah.
So, but there does come a time, like sometimes people, I'll have a client that says, okay, I think it's time to stop nagging my son about his grades because it's ruining our relationship and I want to focus on the relationship. My husband does not want to let grades go. He thinks it's super important. What do we do? And at that point, I say, just agree to disagree. First thing you got to remember is that you're both on the same team. Even though you have different ideas of how to accomplish the goal, you have the same goal. You both love this kid. You both want them to be successful. You just have different ideas about how to do it. And maybe that's perfect. Maybe the kid needs one parent who doesn't care about grades and the other parent who really does care about grades. So if sometimes we can agree to disagree. And here's how I would approach that. If I was the mom who wanted to let grades go and my husband didn't, I would say, I love that you're so invested in this and maybe you're right. So let's do this. You go ahead and do what you feel like is right. And I'm going to do what I feel like is right. I'm not going to check on his grades anymore. If you want to, go for it. If you want to stay on top of that, I will totally support you in that. Just know that I am not. I'm never going to mention his grades to him again. I'm not going to follow up on his homework. I'm not going to enforce consequences for grades. If you want to do that, go ahead. And I love you. And thank you for caring so much about our son.
Do you think that creates then a like good cop, bad cop kind of mentality then for the teenager?
It can, if you're not careful about how you do it.
Yeah.
You know, so the mom is going to have to be really careful in this situation to say, hey, I totally support your dad in this. He loves you. He feels really strongly about this. And so like, we're not trying to sneak things around behind dad's back, right? We're very upfront about the whole thing. And we speak very highly of and respectfully of dad and his approach.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. I want you to succeed. I want you to focus on what you want to achieve. And dad's going to help you, like, come to him when you need help with homework. And I'll come, if you ask me to help you with something, I'll do it.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to be the one to come bring it to you every single day because I don't want you to resent me. And I don't feel like I'm actually helping you.
Yeah. Great.
All right. Well, wish I could say that with a freedom, but every day, freaking math. I told my kids, I'm like, I'm going to tell your teacher you're not allowed to bring home homework anymore. So you're going to have to take it up with them. I'm not doing it anymore.
I had an administrator call me one time. My son was a senior. He's 6'4" by this point, maybe even 18. I don't know if he's 18 or 17, but anyway, he's a senior driving himself to school. And this administrator calls me and said, we have a real problem with your son being on time to school. I'm like, yeah, you're right. We do. What are you going to do about that? And he's like, I was hoping you could talk to him. I'm like, oh, that's cute. You think I haven't talked to him about being on time to school? I'm like, yeah, go for it. Whatever you say, whatever consequences you want to enforce, I will support you. But I cannot control this kid. I cannot get him out on time to school. So it's between you and him.
Yeah.
I've had this kind of conversation more than once with an administrator. And every time they're like, like they don't know what to do with me. What do you mean? I had one kid drop out of high school, and right before, like, he was getting borderline close to dropping out, and he didn't even live with me at the time. He was living and working on this ranch. So the administrator called me and said, I need you to do something about his grades. I'm like, oh yeah, I'm not in charge of his grades. He's 16. He doesn't even live here. And she's like, but ma'am, you're his guardian. I'm like, yeah, but I like, what am I supposed to do? It's one of those things that I had no power to control. And so if I try to control it, I'm going to lose my mind. I had actually gone that route with this kid already. I had tried to control his grades, and we tried tutoring, we tried medications, we tried all the things. So it's not like I just didn't care. I just had to get to this point where I've done everything I know how to do. At this point, it's got to be him.
And that's what you have to recognize, like, sometimes our kids' life's path, the plan for them is different than what we think it's going to be. You know, traditional college is not always the plan or whatever. Like my youngest, he's like, well, I've got to get all perfect grades so I can get into the top science college in the entire world.
Oh my gosh,
I can be a marine biologist. And I was like, sir, how about you get a certificate to be a plumber first? And he was like, that's ridiculous, mother. Like, well, just so you know, there are options. Like, I would love for somebody to be an electrician just so we have some skills under our belt.
That's so cute, though.
So yeah, just recognizing, like, I have this, you have seven children,
yeah,
and they're all going to take a different path. And if that means, like, okay, he's going to go be a rancher, then that is a completely different path than the other kids.
Did not see that one coming.
Yeah, he's going to go figure out, you know, what he needs to do to be successful. Yeah. And his dream is not getting a 4.0 and going to a traditional college.
That was not his dream. Nope.
Yeah.
In fact, I've had one of my seven kids so far choose the path that I thought they were going to choose.
Yeah.
All right.
So, I think for a lot of people, it might feel uncomfortable. And clearly some of these administrators that you were talking to were very uncomfortable with your response.
Totally.
Because I think there is this expectation of you're the parent. You kind of show them who's boss.
Mm-hmm.
So what's the line then for when you do take that approach? Because there can be an element of safety, of
absolutely
behavioral issues, right? And so for some people it's like, okay, grades, I can understand, and I can give that, I can relinquish control over my kids' grades. But there are definitely things where you should not relinquish control. And what would you say about those things? Like, how do you pick and choose?
Okay, so relinquish is an interesting word.
Yeah.
Because when they're four, you can physically control them.
Yeah.
When they are 16 and bigger than you, you cannot control them. So there's no such thing as relinquishing at that point.
Yeah.
It just is what it is. You only have as much control as they invite you to have at that point.
Yes.
And I found that the best way to be a welcomed influence in the life of my teenager is to have a good relationship with them. So I had one kid, this one, and he actually, we've talked about this before. He loves it when I tell his stories. He is super open and actually very proud of this stage of his life. But he went through, when he was 15, he was sneaking out all the time. There's a safety issue, right? He's out in the middle of the night. I don't know where he is. So yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking, I'm the parent. I cannot relinquish control. I can't just not care about this. I have to take this seriously and do something about it. I tried everything. Like, we would booby trap around the outsides of his window and his door. I'd put tape over the door. He didn't have access to the car, but he could have somebody come get him. Like, I tried everything. I grounded, and he was like, yeah, ground me. No problem. I totally respect that. Cause he could sneak out in the middle of the night and go do whatever he wanted. I would set my alarm and wake up in the middle of the night to go see if he was there. Sometimes he was there. Sometimes he wasn't. If he wasn't, what am I going to do about it? He didn't take his phone ever. So I had no idea where he was. I couldn't get a hold of him.
That's terrifying.
There was no controlling this child. Yeah, so at one point I said, I don't know what else to do. I'm going to have to, do I have to put a camera in your room and like turn surveillance on all the time? And he gets this funny smirk on his face and he's like, that would be a fun challenge.
Yeah.
And I like throw up my hands in the air. What the heck am I supposed to do? This was the first moment that I realized, oh, I can't control this. I do not have any control over this child, which was terrifying and also caused me to completely reevaluate what I thought parenting was. Okay, if I don't have any control over this kid, then what is my job here? What is my role? I've got him at home for at least three more years. What is my role how am I going to parent this kid? And I mean, I can't give you the answers to that in 5 minutes. I actually wrote a book about it. You're welcome to go read my book.
Yes.
Called The Power of a Faithful Mother, because that was really a big turning point for me.
Okay. Well, that's the answer. Everyone with a teenager or on the precipice, go get that book. Oh,
it'll solve all your problems.
Because yeah. I mean, we got to prep. We got to be ready.
So
get a coach. Yeah.
Well, I think terrifying. There's a lot of effort. There's a lot of work I have to do, because this whole time, like, I'm getting heart palpitations. Just thinking
I know.
Like, oh my gosh, I think I would die.
Because it is terrifying.
I had a play date for my 4-year-old, and they're like throwing my pillows around, and I'm like, they're ruining everything. And I am getting anxiety because I cannot control a situation. And I'm like, if I cannot control my teenage daughter, I am going to lose it. Yeah. I'm losing it right now. Just at the thought of it.
Well, I have some good news though. It's terrifying before you learn how to make that switch.
Yeah.
But once you make the switch, it is so liberating. It is so much more fun to be the parent of a teenager when your job is to be their mentor and their guide and to have a great relationship instead of controlling them.
I agree with that.
It changes everything.
But I've also heard, like, you as your parent, you're not their friend. So what's the difference between being your teenager's friend and being their mentor?
Well, can you do both? Can you be their parent and their friend? Totally.
Yeah, that's
creating fun. You want them to succeed. If you're setting things up for them to fail or to create a game, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that especially for boys, like the challenge of like, oh, this is a game. I just want to see how far I can push it. And
a little stinker.
Yeah, I can see that. Well, it's so funny. I was thinking about like my experience. My brother Sam and I were only 15 months apart. We're 2 grades apart. You know, we had all these older siblings. So we kind of kept each other in check. And I had like no rules because I didn't need them, right? Like,
right.
I'm going to come home. Or if I don't come home, my parents don't. I'm with the Sterling girls. We're all sleeping in the same tiny bed. Like, you know.
Yep.
It is half the time I'm like, I'm coming home. I'm uncomfortable. Someone kicked me in the face. So I didn't need the rules because I also was like, we're going to get arrested if we go anywhere. You know, I kept myself in check. But like our youngest brother, he was always in trouble. And my parents were like, out of the 10 kids, number 10 is the hardest. And I talked to my brother. I'm like, dude, you're doing this wrong. All you have to do is tell them where you're at. And if you're like,
it's pretty simple.
Communicate with them, you know, and like, you don't even have to have rules as long as you tell them where you are and like, come home when if you say you're coming home, come home. But it's just so funny how like drained our parents were by the time our youngest sibling got out
good
of high school.
Yeah. I mean, they had like 30 years of having children.
Yeah.
It's true. But yeah, I just
can
think
be exhausting.
Like, I think having that open communication and like teaching your kid, like, let's talk about it. Like, you can go do what you want to do. Please don't get arrested. Please don't get pregnant.
I've had the I've had the police called 3 times, different kids. Gosh. I have a daughter who's had a baby without a husband. Like, we've had pornography. We've had drug use. We've had all the things. And yet I'm having a really great time. Like, our family all loves each other. We're super close. And when they make a mistake, they come to me. This was all in the years after they were out of my house, by the way. So it would have been different if I had a 14-year-old getting pregnant instead of a 23-year-old, you know.
That sounds a little more stressful. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That is because you had the relationship was the most important thing. So as they come into their adulthood and their choices are 100% their own and you don't have any real responsibility or legal obligation, having you be the safe landing place is so critical. And that's when like the joy can come in even when there's a trial. Or you have to adjust the expectation of what the next step was going to be. And I, you know, and your kids have to adjust. Yeah.
So something though, I wanted to go back to, Dana, when people say you're not the friend, you're the parent. Yeah. What they're talking about is, don't be so afraid of your kid not liking you that you just are afraid to set rules and boundaries.
Yeah.
Right. And there are for sure times when my teenagers are mad at me and they think, this is the stupidest rule ever. None of my friends' parents ever make them come home at midnight or whatever. There's a lot of times when they're mad at me, and that's okay.
Yeah.
Because I've decided it's not my job to be in charge of their emotions, right? I have to do what feels right to me. And I say this is among my magic words to teenagers. You might be right. This might be the dumbest rule ever. And when you're an adult, you can do it totally different. Sorry. All I know is that this feels right to me right now. And so I'm going to keep this rule and you can hate it, whatever. That's on you, but I'm just going to set this boundary.
Right. So. And the natural consequence, therefore, will be yours.
Yeah.
Okay.
Good. You might be right. I like that. Magic words. You might be right.
They're allowed to tell me my rules are dumb. And I usually counter with, yeah, you might be right.
I like that. Write that down.
So obviously I think we really need to read your book, but I think a big part of your goal as a life coach is to empower parents, empower mothers.
Yeah.
But in your opinion, what would you say is like the smallest effort but the biggest reward practice that a mother could do when parenting her children or teens?
Okay, so that's a tricky, I'm gonna give you a couple different answers.
Okay.
Smallest effort and the biggest reward is probably like one-on-one time with each kid.
Hmm.
Just, it's different when you're parenting the masses than when you're sitting at lunch with this one kid. So just making a dedicated effort to spend one-on-one time with each kid and investing in that relationship. So some things that make a really big difference, but aren't a very small effort, they're kind of a big effort on the parent's part, is learning to be in charge of your own emotions, like learning to master yourself so that you don't get triggered by their behaviors.
Okay.
And then, so I, this, right. That's a lifelong thing. But when I work with a client, I have this program that's divided up into three parts. And the first part is emotional adulthood, which is learning how to be in charge of yourself and not get triggered. The second part is learning to stay in your own lane, figuring out which part is yours to control, which part is not. The third one is connection and communication. And then the fourth one is unconditional love. So that kind of sums up the things that I feel like make the biggest difference.
Yeah. Yeah. I like
that. Really good points. Well, everyone get some therapy right now. Get ready. We'll get ready for the roller coaster.
In preparation. But I just want to put in a little plug. Like, teenagers are so fun.
Yeah.
It's really fun when they have their own opinions and their own jokes. Like, they're tons of energy and they're hilarious and they're so fun. And you don't have to change their diapers or buckle them into car seats. Like, there's a lot of really great things about the teenage phase. So it's not something to be terrified of, really. It's so fun.
That's
good. I'm excited. I'm already in that stage. Like, my oldest son plays football and like, it's just so fun watching him work so hard and, you know, grow and change in that and like have his thing already. And
And a thing that didn't come from either me or my husband, you know, it's so fun to watch them become their own people. You did not get that from me. And I'm so amazed by it.
Yeah. I'm so proud when they tell a good joke. I'm like, oh, well done. That comedic timing was spot on. You're going to do well in life if you can keep a good sense of humor.
Yep.
Oh, super. So
if there's a mom who's in the thick of it right now with their teen, what would you say is the biggest thing that you would say to empower her?
To empower her specifically, like, she's doing better than she thinks she is, which is always true. Like, no matter how big of a mess we are, if she is losing her mind and feeling despair and listening to a parenting podcast, like, She's doing better than she thinks she is.
I agree. Whatever mother
we're all trying
to this. Yeah. You're doing better than you think you are.
Yep.
And you're not alone. I think we say that all the time, but literally you're not the first parent to go through difficult challenges.
I think that's one of the hard things about parenting teenagers is when they're little and you're talking about tantrums or potty training or whatever, you can get together with other moms and talk about that. When they're having a sexual relationship as a teenager, you can't go talk to the other moms in your ward about that. Or sometimes you can't talk to your own parents, like grandparents and aunts and uncles. You don't want to be throwing your kid under the bus. Their privacy is an issue. So sometimes it feels pretty lonely to be the parent of a teenager who's struggling because it's harder to know where to find your support people.
I think that's so something true. Our mom has talked about, that like parenting adult kids and having all 10 of us call, we're all having a life crisis at the same time, and you're mom, and but it's things, all she can do is like pray for us or show up like and bail us out of an emotional pit or take our children away from us for a weekend
and speak so calmly and softly to you. We know she does that, like she has the sweetest, softest voice.
So we're kind of breaking our mother now. Sorry, mom, but
I know. Yeah, we have really put her through the ringer the last
5 years. Bless her. Seriously. Bless her. And we encourage her to take care of herself also. Oh, well, she did a good job. We're mostly functioning. So
yeah, such a great job. I love your mom.
We love her.
Yeah.
Even though sometimes she's like, I just can't listen to your podcast. It's just too much sometimes. I know.
That's all right. Sometimes. I don't know. Like, no one in my family listens to my podcast.
Yeah. That's like, probably
rude. That's why we had all of these siblings, so that we would like bump us up,
Some supporters, have some followers.
We need at least 10 listens, guys. We expect at least every single one of you to listen.
To be fair, I don't listen to my own podcast either because the sound of my voice just makes me cringe, you know?
Well, I'm the one that edits all of them. And like, especially if we do a longer one, like this is kind of turning into a longer one, apologies. But I'm like, I already had to listen to this. Like, this should count, right?
I know.
Well, I just listened back to one we just released last week and I was struggling. I could not get my sentences out or my concepts. And I used the word like 30 times in one sentence, one run-on sentence. I was like, Dana.
You need like a hand signal or something.
She's like, I don't have time for that. Like, oh, I sound so dumb. I need to put like a disclaimer on this episode.
No, this is something we do because it makes us feel good and we just hope people benefit from it, which I think this is one of those episodes. This is a highly requested topic. I think that this will be great. And we will probably have to do a follow-up because there are still so many things.
Yeah, I would love it.
Well, Christy, so great having you. You're
so
great.
Fun to talk to you guys.
We're going to end with telling our stories that came from the mouth of our babe. And you probably have a plethora of stories. So I would love for you to share one that came from one of your babes.
Yeah, well, I'm going to share one that came from this teenager that we've already talked about so much. So after the stage that we realized we could not control him, we decided we were going to try to just ask him, request of him. And we gave him all the reasons why it was important that we know where he is, that he not sneak out, et cetera, et cetera. And we said, so we know we can't control you. You've made that clear. So we're just asking you respectfully, will you please not sneak out anymore? Can you give us your word that you won't sneak out anymore? You know what his response was? No, I will not promise you that. He's like, because I keep my word. I'm a guy who keeps my word. And so I'm not going to give you something that I know I'm going to break. So I give you my word that I will not sneak out this whole week.
Wow.
After that, no promises.
Wow.
Sheesh.
The audacity. That's so funny.
I mean, what can we say? But, well, thank you for your integrity. But you know, it really was nice, because if that boy, if we ever asked him a question, like, we knew he was going to tell us the truth.
That's honorable.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's got that going for him. We're so proud of him for that.
There's so many things that have come out of that guy's mouth that I'm just like, heaven help me.
Yeah.
What am I going to do with you?
Please.
Also, he's 24 now. 23.
Oh, wow.
He's the best. He's amazing. We have the best relationship. He's totally grounded and successful, and like served a mission and came home just so motivated and responsible. And he's amazing.
I love that.
So there's a little bit of hope for even the craziest of teenagers.
Yeah. He survived, and so did you. That's right. Awesome.
And we love each other.
Yes, yeah. That's the most important.
Yeah.
Oh, hey, Kara, what's your story?
Okay. So my youngest, with his really strong speech impediment, he says the funniest things. He has to wrestle every day someone. And so Parker yells while wrestling, "You're smashing my penis. I can't breathe. It's not good for my development."
You're the one that picks fights with me every day. We go through this every day. If it's not good for your development, stop wrestling me.
Yeah. Like, something's going to get smashed on somebody every day. Oh, that guy. But yeah, we can't like laugh at him though, but he's the funniest one in the family.
Yeah.
But when we laugh, he's like, he goes and stumps, locks himself in his room. Like, but you're hilarious. Go with it.
All right. So Stevie, she's my 2 year old and she's really funny, but she lately has been saying, "Lexa, play Talkie No No." And she's saying that because she wants us.
We don't talk about Bruno by Carolina Gaetan. La Gaeta, Spotify.
Alexa, stop. That's it. She wants.
That is hilarious.
We don't talk about Bruno, but play Talkie No No.
Oh, that is my good. Gosh. The fact that Alexa has learned out of
that means. Yeah.
Jumble of nonsense. And that's so good.
Yeah.
Classic.
As you probably heard.
Yes. Yes. Perfect timing. Love that.
Well, thanks again, Christy, for joining us. We will link
my pleasure
show notes where you can listen to her podcast if you're interested, because you are in the trenches with your teenagers and you're looking for one-on-one coaching. We'll link where her website and where you can connect with her if you have more questions. But bye for now, babes.